Wanda is a great name for a dog. I love that. Lindsay Gensel in on News Talk 830 WCCO. Susan Blanche, the studio coordinator, producer, and I were just talking off air about our dogs and if they loved the snow today. I've got a, again, I said I, we have a mutt. She looks like a mini German Shepherd. She's got the floppy ears, though. We get asked what she is all the time. We think German Shepherd, Australian Shepherd, some sort of mix. I call her our toothless Southern Belle because she came up from Arkansas. John got her 5 years ago, 5 or 6 years ago. So she's almost seven. And she's mixed on the snow. She likes it for a little bit. Today was fine because it wasn't freezing cold. So when I went outside to shovel the driveway, she came out and she was running around. She loves to throw her snout down into the snow and sniff and get all the smells. And we've got construction happening at the house next door. So there were a bunch of men coming and going, and she thought that was just the bee's knees. So she got outside and got to run around, and it was kind of a very nice day besides the shoveling. You know, you're outside. It wasn't terribly cold. She was having a good time. I was getting a workout. It was good for both of us. But it is, as I said earlier, it's Love Your Pet Day. So I threw up a photo of Ada and I on Facebook.com/WCCO Radio. And I consider myself to be a pretty hardcore animal lover. I have always loved animals. In fact, I vividly remember telling my mom I wanted to be a veterinarian. And then she broke the news to me that as a veterinarian, you have to make the decision when an animal is too sick, whether it would be better to put them to sleep. And that was when that dream died very, very, very quickly. It was over. There was just no way that I knew I was going to be able to do that. And today I tried to count how many pets we had growing up. We had a revolving door of animals just coming and going all the time. Well, not really going, you know what I mean. But we had a dog, Joey. He was a Bichon. And we had about three cats, calicos named Callie, that came in, you know, consecutive order. And then it gets pretty gray as far as how many cats we had. People joke at the station that I'm kind of the crazy cat lady, and it's sort of true. I freaking love cats. I love them. I love dogs too, don't get me wrong. But there is something about kittens that is just quite possibly the best thing ever. I put my relationship in jeopardy when someone called me and told me they had five baby kittens in their barn that needed to be rescued, and did I have a place for them to stay? And I knew the other half of our house was not going to be happy, but I brought them home anyway because the idea of animal suffering is something I can't handle. It was the hardest part about my trip to St. Thomas is because pets down there are not treated the same way that pets here in the United States are treated. One, there aren't as many resources. There's a ton of stray animals. There's a huge problem with dogs and cats not being spayed or neutered and then roaming, and the unfortunate reality that a lot of dogs are used more for protection than to have like a furry buddy to hang out with on the couch. So it was very hard for me being down there and seeing that and knowing that I couldn't really fix it. We were a foster family for a very long time. It was something that I had started before I met John, and I wanted to do something to help, and someone else had posted on Facebook about fostering and how great and rewarding it was. So I called, and we got our first foster cat. Her name was Fiona. She lived with us for 11 months, and then she got adopted. And then came Betty White, and then she was with us for almost 13 months, and she got adopted. And then, you know, it just became, all right, the next cat, the next kitten. You may have adopted a cat that at one point in time lived in my house. The craziest one we had, though, was a cat named Wampus, like Kitty Wampus. Wampus was a 20-some pound, all-black male cat that had been found in North Minneapolis and probably didn't want to be moved inside. But someone found him and got him inside. And then he came and lived with us for a year and a half before he got adopted. And I will tell you, it doesn't get any easier. It doesn't matter how great the people are who are adopting them. They become a part of your family. And then you just kind of shuffle through them. But yeah, Wampus lived with us for a year and a half. I mean, he moved like two apartments with me. That's how long we had him. But I just, you know, thinking of this Love Your Pet Day, it's just, it's one of those things I think back on of all the sweet little animals that came through our house. And I would love to be able to do it again. Something that I am pushing for, to be able to continue to foster. If you're someone who has ever considered it, I would recommend it wholeheartedly. There's such just a need for it. There's a need for people to open their homes. All of the cats that we had were pretty good with the dog. We never had any major issues. But I had to laugh because as I was sitting at home today thinking about all these cats we've had and may continue to have, I kind of started stalking some of them online. So how it works is when you're a foster, the rescue organization you work with, they arrange for a meet and greet with the people who are interested in adopting. So I have their names. I don't know where they live. I just have names. And so every once in a while I go into Facebook and I type in their name just to see if Frank the kitten pops up. Because there is just something like, we had this kitten one summer. His name was Frank. He was the cutest kitten you've ever seen in your entire life. And he just traveled with us all summer long. He went to the cabin. He went on vacation with us, this tiny 8-week-old kitten. And it was so hysterical to see all of my big macho guy friends just turn into balls of mush when this kitten came in the room, running around and jumping on things. And so every once in a while, I sneak over to Frank's mom's Facebook page. And Frank is large now. Frank ate the kitten. Frank is now a tank, and he is big and in charge. But I'm like, this is kind of creepy. It's like creeping on ex-boyfriends, you know? I'm like, I'm going down this internet rabbit hole of creeping on the old cats that I used to foster. I got a really funny story for you coming up about Governor Walz. If you paid attention to the election, little brain fart there. If you paid attention to the election, you know that one of the deals he made with his family was getting a dog. So today, the governor's office opened up on social media a Ask the Governor Anything question. And there was a hilarious trolling response from someone in the family. We will get to that next on News Talk 830 WCCO. So today, newly elected, well, not newly elected, but he's only been technically in office for about 6-7 weeks now, Governor Tim Walz held a Twitter town hall. Basically, you could go onto Twitter and use the hashtag AskMNGov, and then you could ask them a question. Well, a tweet came through from one Hope Walz, Governor Walz's daughter. She said, this isn't really education related, but, and she paused, when are we getting our dog? And the hilarious story about it is that Governor Walz has two children. And during the election, one of the things that he promised them was if he won, they would get a dog. And so on election night, the first words out of his son's mouth were, okay, great, you won, cool, when are we getting this dog? And they do have a cat already, a cat named Afton. Afton is a rescue cat. I saw a hilarious photo from Tom Weber, who used to work over at NPR, from the governor's mansion of one of the events that they had. And if you've ever seen the inside of the governor's mansion, it's that beautiful dark wood. And there's a big staircase and then the railing that kind of stretches across the house so you can go up and look out over. And right there between the railing is Afton the cat. So they're having this big event at the house, and then you look up in the corner and there's just this plopped hands over the balcony just hanging out there. I said I needed to meet him. But so Hope Walz, you know, she wants to know, when are we getting our dog? And I hope it's him running the account. If not, whoever did it, well played, because Governor Tim Walz's account retweeted that and said, there's a reason we named our daughter Hope and not Patience. And that just kind of set everyone off. I mean, put your politics aside. What parent has not been begged by their child to get a pet? I mean, I used to just bring them home. Poor Karen and Jim. I used to just straight up, I would go down to the pet store, I would buy what I wanted, and I would bring it home. And normally that was just fish. I mean, we had fish, we had an iguana, I had a hamster. There was a stint in high school where there were guinea pigs. But I do remember a classmate of mine coming to school, it was probably fifth or sixth grade, and she said she had a tiny little orange kitten on her farm that needed a home. And I just volunteered. We were taking the cat. So I brought the cat home. And my mother said, where did that come from and how quickly can we get it back? And I have one photo of me clutching this kitten at the kitchen table. I named him Pooh Bear, which is a terrible name for a cat, but I was in fifth or sixth grade. And sure enough, Karen took the cat, called the parents, explained that no, her 11-year-old daughter did not have permission to just decide to bring home this cat and it would need to go back. But that's one thing we were just talking about. Wanda, your dog Wanda, which amazing name for a dog. I know when John got Ada, he spent a lot of time thinking about what the name was going to be.
She already came with a name, kind of. They found her wandering around North Minneapolis, so they named her Wanderer. So we just thought dogs recognize that first syllable, so we'll just call her Wanda.
I like that. See, because I love when animals, especially pets, have great human names. Just funny human names.
Especially old lady or old man names.
Oh, absolutely. The dog next door that just moved in is, well, he didn't move in. His owners bought the house and now he has the backyard, is a very tall, light gray greyhound. And his name is Gerald.
Great name.
Oh, when they told me that, I was like, I like you guys so much. I was like, I hope you're great neighbors, but you named your dog Gerald. That is amazing. We've got right now, my mom's cat. I don't know if I said – I don't know what show I said this on because all my time here kind of just runs together. But my mom is in Florida, and she has a cat that's temperamental. I have a cat that everyone loves. Her name is Pippi. Both Betty and Pippi can't get along together. So they both can't just come and stay at our house. So we had to do musical cats. Betty came to our house. And then Pippi went to my sister's house because, remember, my sister is afraid of Betty. So we've got Pippi. We came up with that because she's a very naughty orange cat.
Like Pippi Longstocking?
Yes. Yes. We had she came with the nickname, or she came with the name Nemo. She was a foster fail. We had her for about 4 or 5 months before an application came in for her. And I had to decide on the spot if I wanted that application to go through or if I wanted to keep her. And so I called John and I said, I think this is our cat. I want to keep her. She is so naughty and a lot to handle, but straight up the sweetest, funniest, most weird cat you've ever met. And her and Ada get along really great. So we've got Pippi and then Ada Jo and now Betty. But my favorite was when we had polydactyl cats. Do you know what that is?
No.
So there's a type of cat that genetically, like, just it's like a poof, and they have an extra thumb. They have extra fingers on their paws. Oh. And Ernest Hemingway was obsessed with them. He was gifted one as a child. And if you actually go to Key West, where Hemingway lived for a very long time, there is a house there that he left to his cats.
No kidding.
Left all of it to his cats. So when you tour through, there are like 30-some of these Hemingway cats, the polydactyls. And the tradition that he set was that he named them after famous people. So when we had a polydactyl, she was Betty White.
Oh, okay.
Because she was black and white. And what is a better name for a black and white cat than Betty White? But I take naming cats pets very seriously. But so I saw this, you know, yesterday the news came out that Karl Lagerfeld had passed away. And I cracked up a little bit because guess who's set to inherit his $150 million fortune?
I'm going to guess his cat.
His cat and his 11-year-old godson.
Oh.
So Karl Lagerfeld was one of the designers for Chanel. He, you know, he passed away in his 80s. So he has a white fluffy Burmese cat that is obviously incredibly pampered. I think if I'm pronouncing this, Chopette, that's her name. Chopette. She's beautiful. But it was long withstanding that everyone kind of knew once he passed away that $150 million fortune was going to be split between this cat and the 11-year-old godson. I don't know how much fancy feast you can really buy with $150 million, but maybe someone – well, here it says she eats at the dinner table. She doesn't eat out of a bowl. She doesn't eat on the floor. She was invited. That's the best. Chopette was invited to join her owner at the table. He told this to a reporter years ago. She has lunch and dinner with me on the table with her own food. She doesn't touch my food. Is Wanda a snacker? Does she like human treats?
Oh, she'll eat anything.
Yeah. Ada's picky. Ada is, I would say, a little pretentious, a little spoiled. There might be someone in our household who puts scrambled eggs on her kibble. And then when that scrambled egg is not there, she just looks at you like, where is it? Where's the scrambled eggs? There might be someone in John's family who feeds her off of a fork. I mean, I'm not pointing fingers. I'm just saying. But yeah, no, we have a good time with our pets. And Ada, the other day I had a good chuckle because we were house sitting for a dog named Sandwich. And Sandwich is one of those dogs like yours who will eat anything. So I was cutting up some carrots. So, you know, dogs like carrots. I gave Sandwich a carrot. And Ada immediately came up to me to take a carrot. And as Sandwich is devouring his, Ada realizes what she has put in her mouth and makes this face like, this was not what I signed up for. But the other dog was eating it, so she had to stick to it. You know, like she was real stubborn in that moment of eating that carrot. I don't know. I could talk about pets all day long. John just texts me, Ada's foster name was Jill. So she came with the name Jill. And he tells the story. He went to the pet adoption. She was in this kennel with a bunch of puppies, and they were all freaking out, and she was just sitting in the back. And beautiful dog. Let's take her for a walk. And as they walked around the pet store, like three or four different people stopped them and asked them where they had gotten the dog. And they were like, well, I think that's a sign we should probably take her home with us. So if you are a pet lover, I feel you on this day. You can head over to facebook.com/WCCO radio, share a photo of your pet with us there. We are going to switch the subject, do a little conversation coming up about mental health. We talked about it last night, but there's this really cool organization in town, and I love that it's local, and they are pushing boundaries when it comes to helping people have access to medical or to mental health care. So we're going to talk to the CEO when we come back here on News Talk 830 WCCO. We talk a lot about mental health, both on the Chad Hartman show. Anytime I fill in, I talk about it. I talk about my own battles, people in my family, my loved ones. I'm honest. I take an antidepressant every morning and I go to therapy probably 2 to 3 times a month. And it's been a saving grace for me. So I was very excited when I found out about a local company that is trying to make mental health care more accessible for people. It's called Learn to Live, and I've got Dale Cook, the CEO, on with me right now. Dale, thank you so much for joining me on this very snowy Wednesday.
It certainly is, and thank you so much for having me.
Let's go back to the very beginning and talk about kind of the idea behind Learn to Live.
About 4.5 years ago, Dr. Russ Morfitt, who's a psychologist, approached me. And what he was explaining to me is that, as you probably know, 3 out of 4 people who struggle with a mental health problem are reluctant to seek out traditional therapy or really face-to-face therapy due to social stigma, which is still a really big, big thing. Or access issues or cost concerns. And so related to that, he said, and also turns out that a face-to-face or an online version of these mental health programs can be as effective as face-to-face therapy if it's delivered within the context of cognitive behavioral therapy or CBT. And it's about 20 years old in terms of the research, so it's very effective. So he connected with me to say, we have this really great thing that can help millions and millions of people and give them access really online with the help of coaches on the side. But I'm not sure how to scale it. I'm not a business guy. Can you help me? Can we figure this out together? And that's really how the genesis of Learn to Live came to be.
Walk me through the website. I find out about Learn to Live and I go there. And where do I begin?
You know, you begin in a couple different places. I think for some, it's walking through the various aspects of our site that help people get familiar with what cognitive behavioral therapy is, what these online programs are all about, what it means to connect with a coach if they want to engage with one of our coaches that we have on staff. And then if they kind of pass through that, they start with a comprehensive assessment. It takes about 5 minutes. They can do it on their phone or their laptop or any device. And the results of that assessment help guide that person to the program, one of four that we currently offer, to the first program that may be best for them to start with. And then it's a very simple enrollment process from there. And in about 5 minutes from that point, they can be enrolled in any one of our four programs and start to engage with it in a very self-directed, highly interactive way, and then also reach out to one of our coaches as well.
You mentioned a little bit about the social stigma and kind of this idea that people are less willing to reach out. I know for me personally, honestly, sometimes when I go into just my general doctor and I have to fill out the forms for anxiety and depression, that is a giant feat in itself of kind of acknowledging the problem. So to have a website where you can do it in the safety of your own home or the office or on the bus in the morning, I can imagine that that is something that is very attractive for a certain type of person.
You know, it really is, you know, and I can speak from experience. In college, I got a little bit overextended with my academic life and, you know, athletics, and was really anxious. And CBT really kind of flipped the switch for me. And it, even at the time then, it was a big deal to walk across campus and engage with a counselor on campus. And so I think to your point, for someone to be able to do this in the privacy of their home or on their phone, wherever they'd like to, but also knowing that we keep their personally identifiable information very confidential. So even though we work with health plans and we work with universities and we work with employers who in many cases might be paying for the service on behalf of their employees and family members, we don't ever share that employee's identity back with the employer. And so to your point about social stigma, I think one is that their identity stays with us, which is encouraging to people. And then two, when they can access it 24/7 and learn about themselves and learn these really important tools to help them address their problems, that's powerful too, because they're making steps towards even destigmatizing the issue for themselves without having to take, you know, what you did, which is a very courageous step, to actually be in an office somewhere and fill out forms, for example.
Dale Cook is the CEO and one of the brains behind Learn to Live. You can find out more about what they're doing to make mental health care more accessible for people at learntolive.com. Now, you mentioned a little bit about your own experience with CBT, and that's cognitive behavioral therapy. Is there an easy explanation for how it works?
One of the powerful things about CBT is that you learn pretty quickly how there's a big relationship between the way you think about situations and how the way you think drives your emotional reaction to them. So while I did not struggle with social anxiety, for example, if you think of someone who maybe gets socially anxious getting on a bus, I think you mentioned, where they may feel that everyone's watching them and judging them, what cognitive behavioral therapy can do is help that person actually kind of take a step back and observe what's happening and realize that, oh, those two people laughing over there are actually just having fun together. They're friends, perhaps. And they're not thinking about me. They're not judging me. And so the way I think about that, the way I read that situation can in turn keep my anxiety levels lower because I'm reading it perhaps a little bit more accurately, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. So I know it was started here in Minnesota, and I know mental health across the country is an issue. What sort of reaction did you guys get once you launched Learn to Live and took it to a global stage?
You know, we feel really fortunate. As you probably know, in the life of healthcare startups and startups in general, it's not always an easy go, especially if you're in a newer innovative space. And we feel fortunate that, you know, our programs and our services have really been welcomed. You know, primarily we work directly with individuals, but we do a lot of partnerships with health plans and, as I mentioned, higher ed and employers. And so we're fortunate to have these business partners that will pay for the service for their communities. But we also see tremendous engagement. So when we look at an average relationship, you know, with the University of Minnesota or Blue Cross Blue Shield of Minnesota, you know, we see a really meaningful percentage of their entire population engage with us every year. You know, in some cases, it's, you know, 20 to 30%, which is really high if you consider, you know, a total population and roughly, you know, a quarter to a third of them doing something with us to learn more about their mental health or even perhaps advancing, right, and doing something to change, to increase their mental fitness, which is another way that we like to talk about it.
Dale Cook, CEO of Learn to Live. It's a Minneapolis-based healthcare technology company that provides targeted online programs and tools for people suffering from mental health issues. And you can find it at learntolive.com. Dale, thank you so much for joining me tonight.
Thank you, Lindsay. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Have a good rest of your day, sir. What I love about Learn to Live is that a lot of insurance companies include it in their plan. So it might be a part of your insurance package already. And you go to this website and there are so many, not only the plan that you find to help yourself, and you can do it in a space you're comfortable with, because I know not everyone wants to go see a therapist or wants to talk to a doctor about it. And men, I'm not trying to point fingers at you. I know lots of men who are in touch with their feelings and are okay talking about some of those things, but sometimes it's a little intimidating. You know, there are social standards. There are, you know, there are moms who are not supposed to crack under pressure, and life gets tough. So this website really brings it to a place that's accessible for so many people, learntolive.com, and how great that it's a local company. And I think it's so cool that, like, we could get it here at WCCO Radio. Like, Entercom could decide that mental health matters, which I know that they know that. They understand that. But then it could give access to everyone in the building to these resources. And I think that's such an important thing, because I know from my experience that insurance doesn't always cover a lot. And mental health right now for a lot of people is something that is just not even on the table when it comes to coverage. So I encourage you to check it out. It's learntolive.com. We will get to a very funny story that I found about Miss Dolly Parton. Headline caught me off guard a little bit, because for someone who is so confident and so sure of herself, there's something about her significant other that might catch you off guard. We'll get to that next on News Talk 830 WCCO. If you watched the Grammys a couple of weeks ago, no doubt you saw the star-studded tribute to Miss Dolly Parton, Katy Perry, Kacey Musgraves, Maren Morris, Little Big Town, big costumes, big hair, big other things. It's Dolly Parton. You use your imagination. But you know who was probably not watching that performance? Her husband of 52 years. So I'm scrolling the interwebs today, doing a little show prep, and I come across this story. There's a rumor that Dolly Parton's husband, Carl Thomas Dean, again, they've been married 52 years, has only seen her perform a handful of times. She said, quote, in an interview on Good Morning Britain, "He's not necessarily one of my biggest fans. He's proud of me, and he loves that I love what I do, but it's a touchy subject. I'm like his little girl, I think, and he just worries about that." This is the part that I think anyone in Minnesota can respond to, because if you've ever tried to drag someone to a concert at the state fair, some people just don't want to go. You know who wants to be at the state fair, though? Carl Thomas Dean. She said the rumor that he's only seen her once is not true. Maybe a handful of times. Usually if I'm playing at state fairs, he loves to go to the fair and go to the tractor pull, go to the stockyards and do all of that. So sometimes he'll ramble around and kind of hear me sing. She said he prefers hard rock, bands like Led Zeppelin, and then bluegrass music. And she said my music's somewhere in between that. I think that is amazing. She did offer up this, though, because, of course, like me, when I saw the headline, I'm kind of surprised because I look at my relationship. I'm not Dolly Parton by any means of the imagination, but John is my biggest cheerleader, and I'm his biggest cheerleader. So can you be someone's biggest cheerleader without liking what they're doing? I don't know. And I'm trying to wrap my mind around the fact of how long Dolly Parton has been around and how many shows she's performed. I mean, she's got an amusement park, for God's sakes. Like, there is an amusement park for this woman, and her husband doesn't watch her perform. She offered up some advice, though, secrets to their successful marriage. She said the fact that we like each other, we respect each other, we've always had a good time. He's crazy and I'm crazy. We laugh a lot, and I think that's been one of the most precious parts of our relationship. And that's great, because here's the thing. If she were bitter about it, that would be one thing. It would be a sign that something wasn't right. But when you're Dolly Parton, you've got to be pretty comfortable with yourself. I mean, you're going out there, and that's a lot you're putting out there. So you just probably roll with it, right? And I'm just gonna lay it out there. I don't think that people with money are immune from having feelings. But like I said, she's got an amusement park named after her. She's doing okay for herself. She's not going home at the end of the day, like pinching pennies and worrying because Carl didn't come see her latest show. She's Dolly freaking Parton. So at some point you just decide, okay, well, we're just going to do this, and you're not going to listen to my music, and I'll hum a few notes in the house, and we'll call it a day. I think that's hilarious. I think when you see a couple like that, I mean, 52 years. I don't even know. How old is Dolly Parton? I can't even – I've got it up. Why – let's see. Do you have a guess? Yes.
76.
73. And I wouldn't have guessed that.
Well, I'm a lot older than you.
That's true.
So, and I used to work country music format.
Really?
And I will tell you that I have heard the stories about him. Is his name Carl?
Yeah.
His name? You know, they'd always say, how come he never accompanies you to the Grammys? How come you never see him when you have your movie, 9 to 5? He wasn't on the red carpet with you. How come he's never around? And she would say, oh, he's just happy living in Memphis or Nashville, wherever they live.
And you do a very good country accent, southern accent.
I used to live in Arkansas.
Ah.
And so sometimes it just kind of creeps back. But she talked about how happily married she was, that he just didn't get into all that showbiz stuff, and that when she goes home, she can kind of be removed from all that showbiz stuff with Carl. And I just thought, well, that makes a lot of sense.
You know what? I didn't even like put two and two together, but it's hilarious that I'm sitting here talking about Dolly Parton. A movie from my childhood that I loved watching was Straight Talk.
I don't think I've seen that.
Oh, it's you have to see it because it's about Dolly Parton's character becoming a news talk host.
Oh.
Like a character host. And there's the scene and now it's James Woods. He is the lead to her character, and she is out on this bridge, and it's got her last dollar, and it's blowing away, and she's got her giant high heel off, and she sticks this big wad of gum on it, and she's trying to, like, grab the dollar bill, and then she meets James Woods. I have not seen that movie in so long, but it was one of those that was always on, like, TBS and TNT.
When you were a little kid.
When you were little, and so you would just, you know, it would come up and watch. I'm going to have to see where it looks like I can rent it on Prime.
Hey, I'll have to watch that too. Yeah, it's called Straight Talk?
Straight Talk. Okay. So it says, a woman ditches her small town life for big city Chicago, where she becomes a sensation as a radio show host. That's hilarious. I totally forgot about that. Because when you think Dolly, you think 9 to 5 and Steel Magnolias. I mean, that's just like, that is it. Mm-hmm. Those are like the two. But I love that. I love that you worked in country music and their relationship even back then was something that people talked about. Just crazy. Oh, so many stuff, so many stories to get to. I love the one about Dolly. This one, I think, is going to fail pretty quickly for Walmart. So you may have seen it. Walmart, if you've ever been in, you know they've got the greeters at the front door. Well, they're coming under fire because a man who has worked there for 10 years. So keep in mind, 10 years. He's got cerebral palsy. He was recently told that his job description changed and he's soon going to be required to agree to a new set of physical demands that because of his cerebral palsy, he's not capable of doing. Things like standing for a significant amount of time, lifting 25 pounds. So Adam Caitlin, he works at a Walmart in Pennsylvania. He loves it. He loves it. His sister is quoted as saying, Walmart is his heart. His job is his driving force in life. And even customers have come out in defense of this guy, that they love coming in and they love seeing Adam. Well, he got the stressful news that his job might be in jeopardy on Saturday. There was a company-wide change in policy to the people greeters. They're all going to become customer hosts, and they're going to be required to stand for 8 hours and lift 25 pounds. He uses a walker to get around. He needs to be able to hang on to the walker, or he can't stand up. So they're hoping that the corporation, Walmart, will change and make it a more lenient policies so that Adam can keep his job. When contacted by Yahoo, Walmart shared this statement. More than 2 years ago, we started a program in more than 1,000 stores using customer hosts to staff entrances. Customers hope give customers a welcome as they enter our store and keep the front clean, safe, and secure. They really don't say anything about why they've added in these things. But his sister said that even if he doesn't get his job back, it's important that they're raising awareness for it. So hopefully someone steps up and gives this guy a job.
Or gives him another job.
Okay. 5820 on air show meeting. 5750. Oh, man. There I go with numbers. You hear about these all-encompassing company-wide policies, and it really must be frustrating. He's worked there 10 years, 10 years in one day. It's all gone.